It is the ready compliance of those responsible for the corporate identity and activity of a congregation with the directives and at times prescriptions of hierarchical authority, notably of the Second Vatican Council, the Holy See, especially when the Holy See speaks and directs the interests of religious the sacred congregations, or us, of religious and secular institutes. You can see why I chose to speak on this form of obedience to this audience. In other words, there are two forms of religious obedience. The one of the members of a community to the rightfully chosen or appointed superiors. The other is of the obedience of those who either as individuals or in this case as a group are responsible for the corporate identity and activity of a community. The obedience, therefore, of those who legislate and or administer their obedience to the church and its rightfully constituted authority. Where such obedience is lacking, I am talking about corporate obedience, understood as the obedience of those who legislate and or administer the destinies of a community, their obedience to the rightfully constituted authority in the church. Where such obedience is lacking or deficient, the whole body and every member of the community suffers, and suffers deeply. Where this happens, and how will I know what footnotes I could give to the next few paragraphs? Where this happens, where the corporate obedience of the legislative or the administrative arms of a community are not themselves responsive to ecclesiastical authority, it matters little that individuals within the community want to be responsive to the church's mandates for religious life. They are caught in the awful dilemma, an impossible dilemma, of having to choose between obedience to the church in its conciliar and papal authority and loyalty to their immediate superiors, who are apt, assuming that they are, greater or less variance with the mind of the church. I've made cautious inquiries about your community before coming here, so that I would know what to say and, well, frankly, what not to say. The impression I received was that your administrative and legislative authorities have been responsive to the church's mind. But for that very reason, though you hear about, well, those other communities, and by now I'm sure you've met many people in those other communities, let me tell you, it is impossible, it cannot be conceived what anguish is being suffered by thousands of religious women in the United States today who are caught in this terrible choice between wanting to be obedient to the church, to the vows they took, and now to the demands being made of them by those who themselves are not obedient to the Holy Catholic Church. When these superiors pool their energies and coordinate their resources, especially financial, as they have done, the consequences on the individual religious are so grave and so harmful as to beggar description. And such reports as on invitation I have written to the Holy See, the only fear I had was that the people in Rome would not believe it. Nothing like this has been seen since the 16th century, when thousands of monasteries and convents throughout Europe were gutted by those who rejected ecclesiastical authority. Pope Paul gives the basic reason why corporate obedience to the Roman Catholic Church is of the essence of religious life. What is that reason? It is because the life of the evangelical councils is part of Christian revelation. The life we are living in is not an ecclesiastical construct. It is not a mere historical development. It is part of the revealed faith, therefore subject to the judgment of Christ's church, which is the divinely appointed custodian of revelation. The church, therefore, is the only safeguard for understanding the religious life in our age and in our culture as in any age and every culture. what the Holy Father did was simply to quote verbatim from the Vatican Council, which, to make sure this would be put on a solid dogmatic foundation, said this. He quoted the council. Let me quote him from his apostolic exhortation. The authority of the Church, under the guidance of the Holy Spirit, has the duty to interpret these evangelical councils, to regulate their practice, and finally to build on them stable forms of life, unquote, the council and the Pope. The crucial word there is stable, which is to be associated with standard, stability, state, which infers that the stability of religious community, therefore their continued existence as states of life which a person can enter and peacefully remain in until death. Depends on many factors, but on none more absolutely than their covert obedience of Jesus Christ in the person of those to whom he said, "He that hears you, hears me. He that despises you, despises me." To which we might add, "He that hears you will be blessed by me. He that does not hear you will not be blessed by me." I am sure that while I have reason for saying these things, I am speaking to the right audience in being fully responsive, not to what I said, but what of the Church which I trust I represent tells us as religious to be. Thank you for listening.
I'm sure the two sisters are as overwhelmed by Father's talk as I am. And as this happened, the things that are so great, we just have new words to appreciate, to give expression to our appreciation. Yes, silence sometimes speaks louder than words. And that is what I have to say right now. I said in the beginning, I am very, very happy to have Father here. You have heard Father's first talk. We have material to think about for time to come. The Father has more to present today. So again, at this time, I say, be ready for questions. We have the topic right now, and during this time, I'm sure we'll have something to ask, because it's the discussions that bring out the personal needs and what is in each person's mind and the Father can go more into detail about certain things. So we'll take now for coffee and then we'll turn. Well, sisters, we are now ready for the discussion period. I see that there are quite a few questions here. I'm sure that Father will try his utmost to enlighten you, and what we don't get finished before quarter till 11, we continue with this afternoon.
Please give suggestions of how a community can strengthen their corporate identity. Yes, I think the most important single thing that a community should do to strengthen its corporate identity is to identify it. In other words, I think in these rapidly changing times, it is of utmost importance that religious communities know themselves. And I would suggest, not necessarily in this context, and it may take some time to do it, perhaps in small groups than in larger groups, on each of three levels, that you discuss and come up with some ideas. First of your identity in the past, your identity in the present, and your identity for the future. And on each level, if I may further suggest, this is a process of isolating, and it may be just a few words, what you have been in the past, your community, I don't mean the Franciscans in general, but you, what you, let's say, have been, how you could identify your communal physiognomy, so to speak, and what you have not been. In other words, what is distinctive, past tense, or what was distinctive in your identity, what you have been, what you have not been, then at the present, how you see yourselves, and then projecting into the future, how you anticipate, and on each level of what we have been, what we were not, what we are and what we are not, and what we hope to be and what we, frankly, hope not to be. I might add, the value of that is deeply rooted in theology, where we teach that the fundamental grace that God gives is for the mind. Push to know yourself. And on that basis, then, you have something which you can both deal with and concretely share with others. Please explain the statement by Father Joseph Russo. Two statements. Father Joseph Russo was the secretary of the Congregation for Religious
He is an oblate. We happen to be on the same faculty in Ottawa, so I'm happy to know that his name came up. He was the secretary for the Continued Commission on the Rite of His Life. He is the best informed man in the Catholic Church on the theology of the Rite of His Life, has written extensively. Comment on two statements. Or maybe the statement, and then I think a question is asked. The statement. Autonomy can coexist with government that is strictly hierarchical, oligarchic, or even monarchical, as is the case within the Church. Even a general chapter, while representing the entire institute, does not receive the power of the elected delegates, neither from the electors. And though it takes from democracy its collegial form of action, it follows that the institute at large is democratic society. The chapter being only a sporadic institution of government within the institute, which according to the law is habitually in the hands of the superiors endowed with the true power of commanding. I think there's either a mistake in his text or something has been missing here. I think the question is regarding the democratic structure, the amount of democracy in religious communities, including, for example, how democratic is a chapter. Well, without going into a lot of details, I would say that though the form in certain ways, for example, of a chapter is democratic because you are elected by your peers, am I correct? And you elect your general superior, which in that sense partakes of democracy. Nevertheless, the authority is not democratic in content or in essence. And I think the best distinction that can be made is between the democratic process and a democratic institution. So democratic processes may and are on occasion used, for example, even to elect the sovereign pontiff, right? Though they had been appointed, nevertheless, they engage in an election which is or partakes of democracy in terms of process. But once you come to the institution, in other words, as far as how the authority is arrived at, or how the authority is achieved, who is named, or what process is used to name the one having the authority, that can indeed does partake of different levels of democracy. But once possessed of authority, the one even elected, he is not responsive to the will of those who elected him. Obviously, they can. And if he or she is not doing a good job, they shouldn't be, say, re-elected. But you see the difference between having one's authority from the people and governing only as an agent of the people. I forget all the propositions that Abraham Lincoln used in his Gettysburg Address. But did he see a government from the people? Remember to get it right. Did he use from?
No.
By and
for.
Okay. He didn't use from. Very well. As a good spokesman for political democracy. Now, he might have used it, but then he wouldn't have added the others, because a religious community is not a, well, a community whose cults, superiors, run a government of the people. They are not merely delegates of the popular mind. Does that help, sisters? The choice of election, the way in which there's even a check and balances, for example, there's a council, right? Nevertheless, in the last analysis, the government in the church, from the top down, and by the way, the best paradigm for religious community is the hierarchical church. Bishops could be elected, why not? By and large, they are being chosen by the Pope. Sister?
Father, are you just saying that in religious communities we do utilize some democratic processes?
Yes.
But religious life itself is not, really should not be a democratic institution.
It is not a democratic institution. Its essence is not democracy. Now, the word monarchical, in English at least, has bad connotations. You know why? Because we fought a big war to be delivered from a monarchy. And 2 centuries of this kind of anti-monarchical thinking has left its impress on our thinking. The correct word is primatial. That is, the Roman Catholic Church's authority is primatial, which includes collegiality. It is not strictly monarchical, where the word monarchy, for us Americans at least, is scarcely distinguished from autocracy. Now, we know there are monarchies that are not autocratic. So the essence is not democracy, though the processes of choosing and even of governing may partake of features of democracy. And I think one of the problems, in fact, one thing that I discussed with Archbishop Meyer in our conference when he was here in the States last month, and he asked for, and very humbly he asked for advice, since I do lecture and write on culture, an adaptation of the church's message to various cultures. What is this American culture, he said, that everybody is talking about? Well, whatever it is, certainly is not, for example, English or French or Indian. So that in the way in which the authority is exercised, that too may partake of certain democratic features. But at the heart of it, for example, who makes the decision? In whom does the authority really reside? Is it in the members of the community? Or is it in the one who, having been chosen, or could be a group, like you, for example, correctly? You are the highest legislative body. But then, once your job is finished, then there are certain people that you choose or elect, and then the authority resides in them. It is not in the members, which, by the way, is not the essence of democracy. It is always the government of the people. What are the other prepositions?
By the people.
By the people.
For the people.
For the people, of course. But of and by are a pretty good description of the concept of a democratic government. No form of collegiality can be totally substituted for the authority of one person acting as superior and entrusted with certain values of religious life. Now this is number two. I'm not sure whether this is a quotation. No form of collegiality can be totally substituted for the authority of one person acting as superior and entrusted with certain values of religious life. Of course. In other words, collegiality in the church always means that someone is vested with authority, which those who are, and you've got to use the word subject to authority, well, do not enjoy it. But I mean, they cannot determine, as it were, in the ongoing process, what they like or don't like. The state of Illinois, I am told, changes on an average of 450 statutes every year. That's democracy in action. Just what is a religious habit? Some sisters feel that as long as they wear something on their head that resembles a veil, they can wear any color and style of dress. Is the veil the sign of consecration? Well, as you know, to talk about the religious habit is to enter a... I'm going to say a lion's den. More accurately, a lioness's den.